Suzette Green Wright has been in the industry for a while. She spent 10 years in the life and accident area, 4 years in the Utah Life and Disability Insurance Guarantee Association, and is now working for the State Insurance Department for almost 2 decades. So we're very, very happy to have her with us. Suzette is the Director of Enforcement, and so if you have any problems with the State Insurance Department, Suzette probably is going to at least review that file, and so it's good to get the information right from right from the top. And I will introduce Connie at the next breakout. So if you need the ethics credit, or if you don't need the ethics credit and you just like to know what you ought to be doing that maybe you don't know, probably a good idea to stick around. So without further ado, Suzette, we appreciate you being here, and I'm sure she'll be glad to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Terry. How many in here own a code book? There's one. How many know how to find it on the website? You should all be raising your hand. How many are hooked up with our automatic information system that when we change a rule or a law or we have a bulletin that you get it by email? Okay. You ought to go out on our website and get signed up for that. You'll get any new regulation, any new law, any new bulletin that may be published. It will come directly to your email. Then there's no excuse. Okay? How many people know what HB 333 is? From 2011 session. It was a change in the code having to do with inducements. Now, none of you would do that, right? That's why you're here. You're all the good guys. But there are some people out there that do things they shouldn't do. So the purpose of this particular hour is to talk about inducements, what happens, how we've changed the law, because it was very strict before. We've opened it up now. There are still some restrictions, but it's not near as bad as it was. And now you may not have to tattle on that guy next door to you. Okay. Before HB 333, we had 31A, 23A, 402, and Rule R590, 154. Both of those were telling you how you could sell, how you couldn't induce someone to purchase. And in fact, they said, hell no, you don't. Bulletin 2010 came out when I got a question from a medium-sized agency saying this large agency was providing free legal service, free HR service. They were doing payroll for them for free just to get the client's account. And we got complaints after complaints. We got an AG's opinion on our statute saying it really was a hell no, you can't do anything, but what's exactly there? You offer it, they buy it, great, walk away. After we drafted Bulletin 2010, you should have it in your handout, the 2010-7, which pretty much tells you, no, you can't do this, no, you can't do this. And everybody had already gone, the nose of the camel had already gone through the tent, and half the body was in the tent when we wrote that. So what do you think happened when Bulletin 2010-7 came out? No clue? No answer? No raise hand? Everybody called their legislator. It states only services specified in the insurance contract can be conducted by the agency or producer. It is considered an inducement if certain items are offered at the time of sale, or considered a rebate if offered as a renewal benefit. This code does not allow for the services to be provided if there is an actual charge. Does allow for these services to be provided if there is an actual charge at or above fair market value. The bulletin brought a forefront of angry folks to the Capitol. And so be sure you read that bulletin. That bulletin now has been superseded by the other bulletin. So what was actually happening? People were doing background checks for prospective employees. They were providing COBRA and mini COBRA services. Now that one, personally, I felt like was a continuation of the original policy, so I had no heartburn with that one. They were performing drug testing, preparing full HR employee handbooks, preparing and conducting employee surveys. They were doing hiring guides, legal services, and HR services, and many more, including payroll, union advice. I like that one on the insurance hat. Providing job descriptions, posting, and on posting and applications, providing various miscellaneous forms. It could be a form on exercise form for the week of such and such they were doing. They were also providing training workshops, which included anything from how to hire a good employee or how to fire a bad employee. They were doing value-added services not specified in the insurance contract. Now, in life and annuity, you don't have a lot of value-added services attached to your policies, but if you're a multi-line seller, you would know what that means, and sometimes they add, I will give you 20 hours at the gym a week or a month or whatever, free on the insurance policy or on the insurance plan. Legislative process, I'm going to go discuss that a minute. I'm going to discuss inducement and rebating. I'm going to discuss HB 333 and 402.5 and what you can do to legally charge a fee and what is still prohibited. So the complaints of, 2010-7 went to the insurance employed legislators, or then Jim Dunnigan, Jim Bird, Representative Todd Kaiser, and Representative Kurt Oda got the brunt of all the complaints from the industry. And I did see life and health and PNC companies or agencies represented at the meetings that were held up at the Capitol. We had three large meetings. Probably 100 people in the room when the room was supposed to hold 60, that kind of a thing. It was standing room only. A lot of people putting opinions out there, what should be done, shouldn't be done. The big, gigantic agencies were represented, the mediums and the smalls in there. When the bill was written, it was vetted very carefully with all parties. Not everybody was happy. Not everybody was overjoyed with what we came up with. But we felt like the progressions from 1984 or 86, sorry, when the bill or the code was rewritten to current day 2010, 2011 didn't make sense because the business of insurance had evolved in that time period. So there was a compromise. We went through a lot of rewrites on that and vetting. The bill did get passed by over 2/3 of the legislature, which meant when the governor's signature signed that document, it went into effect that day. What is an inducement or a rebate? And in Black's Law Dictionary, which is a legal insurance legal dictionary that we use, anything that creates a benefit advantage which the promisor is to receive from a contract is the inducement for making the contract. And another definition is offering a service for free or nearly free, not related to an insurance product or its contract, or something that persuades or leads an individual to purchase or consider an insurance product based on an incentive. What is a rebate? Black's Law says a deduction from a stipulated premium on an insurance policy in pursuance of a renewal or continued purchase of that insurance policy. And in more layman terms, a deduction from an amount charged or a return of part of price paid. Now, since the passage of HB 333, there are things now that you may do, and these things are the things you can do without charging a fee. So you can answer limited HR questions, employee benefit questions, employment practices, talk EPL. At this point in time, you may only talk EPL. Prepare assist with enrollment forms, proof of coverage requests, benefit guidelines, employee communications regarding benefits. Those were things that we felt were still a continuation of the policy. Enrollment and billing assistance, including product benefit statements, new hire insurance benefit packets, and electric, oh, see, that should have a comma, and electric enrollment platform or application systems. And then claims management resolution as permitted under the license. So some of you may have a license as an adjuster. There's some of that that you can do and will always be able to do without charging a fee. So underwriting and actuarial analysis, not many, I don't do that. I don't want to do that. So there are some people that go out there and do that. Providing health fairs or assistance in a wellness program, providing documents related to an FSA, but not the payment or providing administration of a wellness or FSA. And do everybody here know what an FSA is? Flexible spending account, if you don't. Providing COBRA or mini COBRA. Now, COBRA and mini COBRA, for those of you that don't have a health background at all, is when you lose a position with a company that's larger than 15 people, you will get COBRA. If you lose a job with a small employer, you will get mini COBRA. Federal COBRA is your continuation of your plan you had with your employer. And it can be good for up to 36 months, depending on the situation. Mini COBRA is only, or used to be, but I didn't double check that. It used to be only 6 months of coverage, but I think with the changes in Utah, it may now be 1 year. And you can give information, on compliance with ERISA and HIPAA and other health, in regards to health insurance policies. You may assist in summary plan descriptions. Facilitating risk management services is allowed by licensure. Again, that's another piece that's usually with a property and casualty license, and summary plan is usually with health. By charging a fee, you may do, perform background checks, provide legal services, perform drug testing, provide job descriptions, postings or applications, provide payroll services, performance reviews, performance training, union advice, accounting services. And administer HRAs and HSAs, which are is the health reimbursement account and the health savings account. The HRA is the employer's money. The HSA is the employee's money. Provide data analysis information, technology programs, or a website, except for an electronic enrollment platform, which was always offered for free, allowed to have for free. The fee for the service, this is the big point, must be charged at or above fair market value. So in the industry, I saw someone charge $75 to do legal fees for a will, or 75 cents per person to do legal will work. Do you think that now qualifies under this statute? Fair market value means, now this is going to be, or this is a brand new definition in R590-154 that went into effect, goes into effect tomorrow. So you are up and coming right here with this one. Fair market value means what a knowledgeable, willing, and unpressured buyer would pay for a product or service to a knowledgeable, willing, and unpressured seller in the open market without any connection to other goods, services, or contracts sold by the licensee. Sorry. So what is still prohibited? What can you still get in trouble for? Providing a commission rebate. Do all of you do that? I hope not. This is no. Paying or contributing to a salary of a person who purchases an insurance product from the licensee. We had a carrier in Utah who paid for someone to sit in the employer's office and handle all the complaints and claims questions on that particular health insurance product. They paid that salary, benefits, everything for that employee. Is that fair to the rest of the carriers in the market? So now after HB 333, you're out. We're still getting complaints from the industry. And what is meant by, this is what I'm going over, sorry. Complaints that agencies are still using their consultant license to perform the services prohibited without a charge which is opposite of 333 or 31A, 23A, 402.5. So we're still getting the complaints. They're still doing it. How are they doing it? They're putting it under their consultant license and counting it as a fee. But it's a hidden fee, so the employer doesn't know he's paying that fee. Does that mean they've followed what the statute says? Now, the statute said any licensee, a consultant is a licensee. Now, the big guy, and this is another complaint we hear at least weekly, the big guys are still offering for free services that should be provided at a charge. So what is meant by, everybody knows that we change from $3 to $25. Does everybody know that in the room? No? No one? Okay, there's some nods. The statute reads, and I love the language, a de minimis gift or meal not to exceed $25 for each individual receiving the gift or meal is presumed to be a social courtesy, not conditioned on the purchase of a particular insurance product for purposes of subsection 4A. The intent of this section is to raise what was $3 to a compromised and more realistic amount of $25. I wanted 10. Jim won. This was not intended to allow games of chance or drawings that would be contrary to Utah Criminal Code 7610-1101 through 1109. And speaking on that little statute, how many went to the state fair? Anybody here went to the state fair? There was a very large national PNC company there that was doing a drawing to win an iPad and also I think a gift certificate for $250 to Target and I can't remember what else. Well, one of my employees decided to go to the fair on the last day and happened to walk by that. I've already had two calls, one from the home office, one from their legal counsel in Utah today. And I said, well, what I'll probably do is this, but you should be more concerned about that criminal code law than anything I could do to you. And so the local guy decided to call the national guy and say, we are no longer to do drawings in Utah. And the AG's office will be very happy with that. This was not intended to be conditional to the sale of an insurance product. Who knows the definition of a sale of a policy? Anyone? Sale, solicit, or negotiate. So what does that mean? Does that include a quote? We think it does, yes. That may come out in your next presentation because we have some things on that in there. No, I totally agree.
Yeah.
I went to one of the seminars to find out.
But you asked what is the definition of sale? And sale is the exchange of money for the policy, conditional of acceptance upon the policy.
You need to look at the definition section in 31A1301 under producer for the insured. That'll answer your question. Yes, sir.
But that has to include that and or information received because of the fact that as soon as you take an application, your intent was for to have a sale, whether or not that sale goes through, it is still included as a sale.
And I think this carrier felt like they could get by with it because they put on their checkbox, and that checkbox said, do you want to be contacted for an insurance policy? So they felt like they were okay. And they probably were okay with me because that was the chat box was there, but it wasn't okay with the gambling law. Connection to a sale.
Yeah, that's totally and separately aside from that.
Yeah, but our definition includes solicit. So solicit to us is to quote. But we're going to try and clarify that in this next session. Because it is, there's a lot of them getting away with a lot that we didn't close all the holes. And we knew that. We knew this would be a work in progress. Jim Dunnigan told him right up, we'd try it for a year and see what happens. We're making about 4 changes this coming session. Minor, 1 was asked for, 3 I asked for, just because we were seeing the loopholes coming through on complaints to our office. So we have requested, this one I know for sure is going to go through. This came from the PNC side of the world. They want to be allowed to analyze employer job descriptions, employer safety procedures and manuals, and provide information on training on best practices. And it really is all related to employment liability insurance, and some of you may sell some of that, I don't know. But that was requested almost immediately when the doors shut of the session last year. So we already have that in a piece in the department cleanup bill. It's being reformatted by legislation right now. I can tell you some stories, and I'm, you know, really the easy guys to me are the life guys. How many is a life salesman in here? We have so few complaints on the life side of the industry other than in churning. Churning is the big thing that I've seen out there, and I went over and met with Jim Dunnigan and a client, a friend of his. And they explained how this client was sold a policy. 5 years later, they changed him to another carrier, another policy. Started out with $1 million policy. Second time around, it was still $1 million policy, but now we surrendered after 5 years, so we have surrender charges. They did it again 5 years after that and 5 years after that. So he's out to the tune of about $100,000 in surrender charges. So that is a big hit. And so we definitely have a case open on that one. You know, because, and the guy's made money. The guy's made a lot of money on this guy. And this poor medical person, you know, I trusted him. He was my neighbor. And a lot of times we see that's what happens. It's a neighbor or the brother of a friend or something that sells, thinks, okay, I've got an in because he's my brother's friend or my mom's friend, and I have an in to go sell this product, and then they sell it incorrectly. What about, where are you on suitability? Does everybody understand suitability in the life and annuity industry? You should. How many of you sell variable products? Anybody in the room? What else do you have to have besides the insurance license? Tell me why. Who knows why? Well, yeah, sort of. I mean, we share the protection on it, but do you want the life guy down the street to sell it or turn your person from the security product or the variable product you sold them, knowing that that variable product fit, it was the right thing to sell this client, and then the neighbor down the street or the agency down the block changed it to a whole life or a term life policy for no reason?
Well, they do that anyway.
I know, but they're not supposed to discuss a variable product.
But they do that anyway.
Those are the ones you need to call me on.
But before, the attitude, are you telling me that the attitude of the insurance department has changed? Because the attitude of the insurance department has been, even if the producer coming in has determined that there was fraud and the client was misled, once the client is normally under the policy, they're reluctant to charge back. But they don't want to admit that they got scammed sometimes. And so department spends well, but the insurer has to bring the complaint. We don't care unless the insurance.
Well, we, if you can, you're right to a certain extent. I have to have a client that's unhappy. And they sometimes don't get happy till it's the second and third time they've done it, had it done to them. But as this case that I was just over in Jim Dunnigan's office for this week, there's a lot there that can happen. And if we're not made aware, we don't know it's happening. If we get a If we get a call or a series of calls, this particular agent keeps doing this, this, and this, we're going to call the agent in. We will call the agent in and just talk to him and say, why are you doing this?
Well, I'll tell you, I would disagree with that. That's the case. I had to go to the Division of Securities to get a guy who was actually committing not only insurance fraud, but also securities fraud, because openly in his seminars, the insurance department wouldn't touch it, but the Division of Securities did. And he lost his, but he only lost his securities license. So what happens? He loses his securities license. Now he's doing it with IULs.
Who are you sending that information to?
Yeah, who are you?
I talked to the person who previously handled complaints. I can't remember who.
Okay, complaints is different than market conduct. I've been the only female director, so I don't know who you talk to.
It's been a while. I have to go pull up my files. But, I mean, this isn't the only thing. I brought one in. There was an agent from out of state. He was in Louisiana. He forged the client's, the insured's signature. He wasn't licensed as a non-resident agent in Utah. And Utah's Utah Insurance Department's response was, well, he's not licensed in Utah, so there's nothing we can do about it.
That's not true.
I know it's not true. But
I mean, I can't take his license away because he's not licensed with me, but I certainly can turn it over to his home state.
And you guys deal with this on a personal note afterwards so the rest of us can listen to what you have to say.
I'm kind of to the question and answer period on this, so it's. I was going ahead and taking them. You had a question. Yes.
Just a question. In the past, for example, if a person has been securities registered for 23, 25 years and decides it's not a good idea at this point, even though they may know as much or more than many of the people who are selling securities products, they're not allowed to talk about it. In a conversation with Representative Byrd, it was pointed out that products are so complex that only a currently licensed person who's going to be in favor of that should be able to give advice or information about how that product works. Well, my concern is if the product is so complex, would the department consider having the potential buyer go through a course before they can buy it, instead of limiting their options for input about what they've done?
I can't force a buyer to do anything unless the buyer has an insurance license that I regulate. And it makes total sense. I'm not saying it's not sensible. It is. But that would probably should come from the carrier saying, have you given them this class on this or whatever, with a signed statement that they received the class.
And you're left as the buyer to figure it out yourself. That's my only problem with that whole what you said earlier. You know, would you want your securities product to be replaced by somebody down the street? Well, well, somebody down the street might have something that's great for the client.
Right, but they should have someone in the room with them, maybe in the agency that also has the security so they could explain the difference. That person has not been trained on those specific security products.
If they're just replacing it, they're not explaining the difference. They're just transferring the money somewhere else.
Well, I think we won't get a complaint if they're happy.
The replacement notice references that they've done analysis of policy. If the person who's making the recommendation for the replacement doesn't have a license, how can they be making the recommendation? That goes back to the suitability issue.
I agree. Yes. The one in the back. In the life industry? The churning. I think the churning is the big issue. I think I don't want to take away from Connie's presentation. You're gonna she no. You get to share the glory. I think it's, we can say cross-border sales, that's an issue. We have agents that are down in St. George or in Washington County or up north in Cache County that are selling either Nevada products, Arizona products, or Idaho products that are not filed in Utah, not approved in Utah. We do have that. And we not only go after the producer, but we also go after the company. The company should know that policy shouldn't have that address. And so that's one of the big ones we get. It keeps Connie busy almost 24/7. Yes.
How it may be morally inappropriate, but you fix that by going to Evanston?
If that policy address is changed within that first year, there's going to be an issue with us when we find out. The case I can tell you about. They had an office in St. George. They had an office in Las Vegas. There was a personal family member who had a house in Las Vegas. They had a post office box for the office in Las Vegas. So they had three addresses they were using in Las Vegas to sell these Nevada products, these two-tiered Nevada products that we didn't allow in Utah. And we got the agent. We find the agent. The three carriers involved have all been fined. And we are going after more agents doing the similar behavior that the carriers have now turned over to us as names. What? Oh, the stamp. I know all about CE. Is there any other? And Connie has her cards here. If you have a question that you really, or Bernie need to share something with us, please grab a card from her. Yes, sir.
I want to change gears and ask a question from a very different angle. I know your office is pretty small for all what it's cast for. You don't have to laugh about it. It's true. But the question I have is kind of your perspective on, you've got a certain number of complaints that come in. You've got the agents that have all the issues they're dealing with, and they come in with their problems and so forth. And then you got the legislature. Sometimes to fix them and sometimes trying to create more problems, putting it in perspective. From the either agent or consumer side, how do we convince you guys as the agency, the government agency, that a problem is important enough that needs legislative attention?
I'm not really out there to write a lot of law. Because then I always have to find a legislator that's going to run it for me. I am running a bill this time the department's running a bill that one of my employees and I worked on in changing discount plans, some stuff in there. But it's better to go to a legislator first. Then they tend to come to me or to Betsy or to the deputy or the assistant commissioner or the commissioner themselves and say, we need something done on this. Who on your staff can help me work up a bill?
Well, the way I'm looking at it is, I go talk to the legislator. He's not going to be necessarily moved saying it's important. and they're in favor of the bill, but it's just not a high priority anymore. That's going to help with the legislators moving it up the priority.
And there's two ways, you know, you've got four legislators, well, three this next session, that do life, health, and PNC. Representative Byrd, Representative Dunnigan, and Representative Kurt Oda. Representative Todd Kaiser did not choose to be to run again this year. But those three men know us by name. Three of them have my home phone number. And I have been called at 10 o'clock at night. Say, I had someone call me, and this is what the issue is. What are you? And they asked me if I'm seeing it also. So if you let me know that this is going on, and you let them know it's going on, that and that you have talked to me or told the commissioner or the deputy or the assistant commissioner, then they're going to follow up. Okay? Yes, sir. If you really, really hate it, you go to DAR, Department of Administrative Rules.
But didn't the insurance department, is that a rule that was promulgated from the insurance department?
Yes.
So why don't we go back to the insurance department?
Because I think we were trying to fix a major problem of influx of complaints that came into the department. And they felt like we had enough room in rulemaking authority in the statute to do that rule. And I think if you had a document that said, I, you know, exchanged this policy for this reason, I don't think we would look at it. Talk to Jim Dunnigan. Yes, sir.
The other problem that I see with that is, if you don't sell securities products, if you're not out there soliciting mutual funds or variable annuities or something, you can't keep your securities license. You have to be doing a certain amount of production to stay with a broker dealer.
Right.
There is no way that you can have a securities license. There's no license out there that is considered a securities license where you can just sell the alternative product. So you have to be selling those products or your securities license is gone. So even if you're trying to give options to the client, after a while, you won't have a security.
Right, because you're not active in that area.
Yeah. So eventually, if your security's licensed and you write variable products, you won't have any competition because they'll all be out of the, you know, out of the business, right?
Who has an idea of how to fix this? Because you've got the variable products.
That's right. But for 5 years, I've been looking for a broker-dealer who did just that, and I can't find one.
Come see me. I'll give you a list of about 10 right off the top of my head. Because not only are there insurance ones, but there are also a number of independent ones.
All of those insurance ones require you to send your insurance business to them, correct?
No. A number of them do, but not all. There are some independents out there that don't require that.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I would like to see them, if one of my agents comes and he has run into a client that needs, it seems like the product is not fitting them, a security product, a variable product. I would like to see at least a discussion so that that agent could take a securities agent with him and talk to the client and educate them on what the pros and cons of that are. But I know our insurance company, they're interpreting the state statute that there cannot be any joint work on that case because it violates the law the way that they are interpreting it. So is there some...
Have you talked to Betsy lately? I would throw that one at Betsy Jerome. Because I'm not sure that scenario has come to us, and she would know.
Okay.
I can't think of her phone number. I'd give it to you right off the bat, but.
We have it, but yes, we had talked about it, and they said absolutely not until the loss.
Well, then we need to maybe have a clarification in the rule. And there, it's real easy to open a rule and make changes. A lot harder to do it in law.
Okay.
Okay. Any others? Okay, do you have an answer to how to solve the problem? Yay! You're on.
I just have a question on inducements.
Okay.
Do you have an agency with a sister company that has a payroll service, and they offer 3 months free to all new business clients, whether they deal with the insurance or not? Is there a problem?
The payroll company offers the free 3-month payroll service? I don't regulate the payroll company. I do the PEO. If it's a PEO, yes, I do regulate it.
But if the insurance side said, if you sign up for insurance, you'll get 3 months free, even if that's typical of any business, is that a problem?
That's a problem if the insurance agent's saying that. Yes. There we go again. You get this benefit over here. I thought I saw another hand. Well, thank you. Not sure how far it was supposed to go. But if there's no other questions, I'm willing to talk to you in the audience for anybody that really wants to talk, and Connie is also available. Now, if you're going to stay for hers, she's got funny stories that you will just roll in your seats.